explain to the people some of the great foundations upon which this nation was built. I think sometimes today that we forget that the liberty that we had, that we enjoyed this day, that the liberty that we had that allows us to stand here and sit here tonight and laugh and have a good time, was purchased because some other men died and paid an incredible price. So as we went to the people, as we went to those who were interested in the cause of Christian liberty this year, we felt that it would be appropriate to share with them one of the great tributes of America, the price that was paid for the flag. Most of us know, I'm sure, the Star Spangled Banner by heart. At some early age, you went to school, they taught it to you as a matter of rote memory. It's something that when you hear the familiar strains begin to sound, you stand, you sing, it automatically comes forth. Most of us sing that song and never realize what it says. We've never come to the point where we've ever sung it out of meaning rather than duty. We've never come to the point where we realize what the flag means to us. The Star Spangled Banner is a song that our Congress has memorialized by calling it our national anthem. It's a song that was written by a man by the name of Francis Scott Key. He was, of all things, not a songwriter. He was a lawyer. The American government was engaged in the great fight for the colonies. The thing, could 13 independent states fused into a union that they said was God-breathed, could they survive? As the battle went on, suddenly the casualties grew heavy. Both sides, furious and principled, engaged in conflict and took prisoners. The American government came to Francis Scott Key and said, would you go and try to arrange a prisoner exchange? Could you go and see if you could arrange to have some of our American boys released and brought back to our colonies, to our soil? They said they have a large boat that lies just outside of Fort McHenry near Baltimore. And Mr. Key, in that boat they have our men, and you'll have to go to them and see if they'll agree to this exchange. Francis Scott Key was authorized by the newly formed government to go and offer one British soldier, one British prisoner, for one American, with the hopes that they would agree to that principle. As he made his way to that great boat, once on deck, he realized the immensity of its size. He was ushered in the presence of a man who they called an admiral of Her Majesty's fleet. He explained the principle, one soldier for one soldier. They deliberated, they thought, they questioned, and suddenly Francis Scott Key heard what was music to his ears. Yes, sir, we will agree. You may take one soldier off of this boat for every British soldier that you now hold prisoner, who you will give to us in exchange. Francis Scott Key was beside himself. He said with happiness he'd come in all, not realizing whether he'd even have a chance to secure the freedom of these boys, and now suddenly he realized he was successful beyond his dreams. And then he realized no one had yet told these boys they would be free. He asked the admiral if he could have the privilege of going below that great ship's deck and telling the boys of their new freedom. The admiral said, why, sure. He made his way to the back of that ship. They unloosed a great, huge board, and they lowered Francis Scott Key into the great bowels of that ship. Then suddenly he saw what he said would never be taken from his mind. There in the dark caverns of that ship, chained to each other, every third one fastened to the floor, held in place, young American boys. Most of them, he said, were broken in body. Some, he was sure, would not live out the night. Men, you're to be free. You're to go home tonight, tomorrow. We're going to reunite you with your loved ones. You're free. We've arranged for an exchange. You men are to be taken from these irons. You're to be restored. Do you hear me? He said they looked at him with glazed eyes. And then they asked a question which was positively stymied him in his tracks. Mr. Key, are you telling us that you want us out of here, that to the Herald?
Yes. Mr. Keith, are we to be allowed to fight again? Will they let us fight? What's the matter with you boys? You must go home to fight? Don't you understand something? You've paid too much already. My word, your country can ask no more of you. Look at the price you paid. Listen, you go home, let us honor you. Let us make you heroes. We want you with your loved ones. We don't want you in the war anymore. But listen, men, for you, the fight is over. The battle's done. You don't understand. It's the key for us. The battle's not over. Is won. Until we've secured what we set out to do. Francisco Key was moved. He couldn't believe the spirit of these folks. He made his way out of the great insides of that ship and he found the admiral. He said, "Sir, I bid you with Godspeed, get these boys out of here. Quickly, move with dispatch." Only now suddenly the admiral's demeanor has changed. "Mr. Key, the release of these boys isn't important anymore. It doesn't really matter what happens to them." I just got Key gripped with fears. "I mean, what's the matter? You're not going to renege on your word. You're an officer. In the name of Her Majesty's fleet, you could not, as a gentleman, go back on your commitment and promise to me." "No. No, Mr. Key, I'm not going to go back on my word to you. Mr. Key, there's not going to be an America tomorrow. It's all over." What are you talking about? It's all over. "Mr. Key, come over here. I want you to look at something." As they stood on the port side of that great ship, he said, "Tell me what you see." "I see America." He said, "Right over there, that's Fort McHenry, that's our flag, that's my land, that's the nation I represent today. Mr. McKee, come over here, stand to starboard and look out, tell me what you see out here." "I don't know, I don't see anything, all I see is a lot of ocean, just a lot of sky and a lot of water." "Listen, Mr. Key, your eyes aren't trained, look very carefully, look right where the water meets the sky, tell me what you see." "You talking about those little black specks? Is that it?" "Mr. Key, those little black specks are the British fleet. With the wind at their back, they'll lie anchored here in this hole of bay within a matter of 2 or 3 hours. My government, Mr. Key, has issued an ultimatum to your nation that this volley of independence is over. You're to be subject to Britain. And should you tonight not lay down those things you call the stars and the stripes, that flag of rebellion and insurrection, if that flag does not come down tonight, Mr. King, our instructions with this fleet are to remove Fort McHenry from the face of the earth. We'll literally blast it to the ground." Francis Scott Key said, "Now listen, you're out of your mind. There's nothing at Fort McHenry that's of interest to you. That's manned predominantly by civilians. There's no armament there. There's nothing there. All they keep there is a lot of clothing and quartermaster materials. Leave that fort alone." "Mr. McKee, tonight, sir, your flag comes down or we level that fort. Do you see that flag over there, Mr. Key, on the rampart? If that flag comes down before the sun sets, we'll leave your nation be, and you'll return to the fold of Great Britain. But if that flag continues to fly, sir, it'll mean insurrection, it'll mean rebellion, it'll mean that you have decided not to honor reason and good sense and just common dignity of man, and we will blow you to the ground." Francis Scott Key sat there and watched as the ships began to come. He watched as they made their way. He began to count 1, 2, 3, 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40. And as the ships in the wind tacked to and fro, he realized he couldn't count them. Suddenly he realized the enormity of that great fleet that was going to set anchor shortly. Now he watches as the gunmen begin to prepare the cannon. He watches as they bring out the sulfur kegs, as they bring out the charge, as they bring out the rams. And suddenly he realizes, my word, what an incredible amount of armament. And he's reminded that no nation on the face of the earth has successfully withstood that fleet. He goes down below now. And he sees the men inside the ship again, the prisoners, and then he tells them of what he's seen, of the word of the admiral, of the fact of what's to happen tonight, of the fact of the presence of the fleet, of the fact that the flag is to be lowered, and if it's not, Fort McHenry is doomed. Mr. Key, listen, sir, you got to do this for us. Somehow, you got to tell them not to lower that flag. That flag can't come down tonight, Mr. Key. Listen, boys, don't you understand that if that flag doesn't come down, you may never get out of here. You may die rotting here with your bones, you understand? Listen, Mr. Key, doesn't matter what happens to us. What matters is what happens to that flag. Mr. Key, that flag is our colors. That's the flag we followed in the charge. That's the flag we buried our brothers in. That flag's America. Mr. Key, don't you understand? She's God-breathed. You can't let them lower that flag. All will be in vain, Mr. Key. Listen, I can't do anything about it, man. I'm out here. I'm stuck. I'm like you. Listen, Mr. Key, tonight, you gotta let us know where that flag is. Mr. Key, we gotta know. We're chained out here. We can't see light from dark. We don't know when it's day or night. Mr. Key, tonight, you gotta let us know. Listen, look, there's some cracks in the decking. Mr. Key, those that are not chained to the floor will stand. You come over and you put your mouth on that decking and you scream at us, Mr. Key, we gotta go. Don't leave us down here tonight without knowing what happened. Mr. Scott Key went back up on deck. As he looked out, there were all the sailors of the fleet, and he said all the eyes were trained on one flag, just furled in the wind. Everybody waited to see if someone would come forward and bring that flag down. He said as the sun began to set, he realized that that huge ball of fire which would soon signal night with its disappearance was about to bring darkness, and no man would come forward to lower that flag. The last that he saw was the glowing of the land, when darkness and quiet settled completely on those ships. Now, suddenly there was more noise than ever heard in his life. Suddenly, all of a sudden, he heard these cannons discharge. Suddenly, he realized that he'd never heard 100 cannons in unison before. He heard the orders. He heard the screams of the men as they moved to handle the hot mantle of the iron. Load, ram, charge, fire. And all of a sudden, he realized, oh, no. Well, there, that's a smart looking stand against that. Four and 10 minutes, he watched. And then he heard some screams. Mr. Key! Mr. Key! Do you hear us, Mr. Key? What's happening? Man. He ran over. He put his mouth to that decking and he screamed out. I can't see anything. It's dark red. There's so much fire. There's so much noise. I can't see. Listen, Mr. Key, listen. Mr. Key, you wait. When those phosphorus bombs explode, we hear them. You'll see a red glare, Mr. Key. You watch. You'll see. And then in a red glare, he saw a flag. Still at the top. See, that night they pounded that flag. And finally, at 3 or 4 in the morning, with all of their armaments spent, they paid their load. The men fell into quiet exhaustion and waited for the dawn. Now, as the dawn came, there stood the flag at the top. America that night had not fallen. He made his way now quickly inside that great fort. Once inside, he said he saw no handful of dirt at its original place. All of that huge amount of armament had literally torn that fort apart. And then he saw something which stirred his spirit. That flag on the rampart with all of that armament aimed at it had been hit again and again. And because of the successive beatings, it had dropped. And a patriot, a man whose name we'll never know, whose face you'll never see, ran from a place of safety and grabbed that flag and held it with his own body. He knew that all of those cannon were aimed at that flag and that pole. But if the colors were down, America was done. He knew he'd die, and he died quickly. Another man who saw what he had done raced from his place, and he too grabbed that flag, and another, until by morning, what he called a cement of human bodies, a mortar, held that flag in place. He took a pen and began to write, "Oh, say, can you see, by the dawn's early light, what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming? Whose broad stripes and bright stars, through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watch, were so gallantly streaming. And the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave?" God bless the patriot. God bless America. May that spirit live tonight.
Thank you for listening to this sermon by Attorney David Gibbs. Attorney Gibbs is founder and president of the Christian Law Association, a ministry of legal helps to Bible-believing churches and Christians. Because CLA is a faith ministry, the legal work it performs is done at no charge to those helped or defended. You may contact the Christian Law Association by writing to P.O. Box 4010, Seminole, Florida, 33775. That's the Christian Law Association, P.O. Box 4010. Seminole, Florida, 33775. If you wish to call with a legal question or request for material, our phone number is 813-399-8300. That's 813-399-8300. Again, thanks for listening, and may the Lord bless you richly, now and always.